obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name is Shalabi and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really grateful to be here. And I was thinking earlier that we had come and kind of scoped out the room earlier, and I saw these seats here, and I said, well, it's going to be the late meeting, so there'll be like maybe like an eighth of the people that would be in here. But I figured what they'd do is they'd pull the partitions and then maybe just have the dance next door while I talked, you know? So through the wall while I'm talking, I hear like, you know? So really grateful that didn't happen. So I want to compete with the dance. I mean, I know it's on another, you know, but not right next door. So anyway, I want to thank Andrea for being a fantastic hostess, and she's been on the phone with me. And when she called me to ask if I could send her, you know, something, you know, like a CD, I was so sick that she probably just thought, oh my God, she's gonna, like, I can't ask, she sounds crazy. I was so ill, like January was just a horribly sick month, and when I, you know, I'm like, what do you need? You need a CD? I mean, I just sounded crazy, you know? So I sounded like I just rolled out of the bar, you know, after like smoking all night, and you know, so yeah, carry the message. So But so when I talked to her, she's like, oh, I'm so glad your voice has healed, you know, so, yeah, me too. But I am really grateful to be here, and I want to thank the committee. We came early, we came yesterday, and we got to come to the chairman's dinner last night, and what a, I mean, the enthusiasm and the love that you guys have for your convention is really overwhelming, and everybody's been extremely friendly and nice, and my name is Shalabi, and it's on my badge, but I notice most people, they just go, oh, Lancaster, because they don't even want to attempt the name, you know, they just, you know, so if you see me over the weekend, you just be like, oh, Lancaster, and so I'll be like, yeah, you know. So most people go like, oh, I've been there once, like, ugh, so, yeah. But I am really grateful to be here, and I'm really grateful to be sober, and I just have to say this because I'm really excited that that Patty is here. I was newly sober, probably like maybe 6 months, and that my sponsor that I had finally asked, it took me about 4 months of sobriety before I asked somebody to sponsor me, and my first sponsor worked at Central Office, and she was a big lover of all things Alcoholics Anonymous and read all the literature, and she would also pass on a lot of speaker tapes to me, and I say tapes, not CDs, tape, and because, you know, so you can figure out how old I am, and Patty was one of the first tapes that she had given me. Patty and Larry T. Those were, and I would listen to them over and over and over again. And what Patty had done for me is that she made it, and Larry also, is that they made it seem like it was going to be okay, that I was going to be allowed to have the personality that I had, that I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I was going to be able to be funny, and because they made me laugh. And I don't know that in a lot of the years prior to getting sober that I had really laughed, like really laughed. And as my mother had reminded me while still drinking that I hadn't been funny in a really long time. And so, because I wasn't funny, I was extremely mean when I was drunk. But I would like to make you like the butt of my joke while you're letting me stay at your house. You know, I like to humiliate people. And so, you know, and so coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just thought, my God, like, my personality is so, like, repulsive that there is absolutely no way that I'm going to be allowed to be anything like who I am. I didn't even know who that was, but I just thought, like, I'm going to have to, you know, there's only one thing you have to change, and that's everything. I don't know what I thought. Like, I think I'm going to have to be like, and I will have to, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth, and I'll just have to, you know, I don't know what I thought, but I just thought that I wasn't even going to be able to talk. Really, you know, that it was just going to be out of the question, you know, especially when I'm still, you know, maybe a year or so sober and my sponsor's like, I don't think you should really be talking. And I was like, oh, like, but when? She's like, not now, you know, so Yeah, so it took me a while before I was able to talk, and still to this very day, at 15 years of sobriety, sometimes I probably ought not talk. So January 6, 1998 is my sobriety date, and so I just celebrated 15 years of sobriety, and that is the craziest, thank you. That is all Alcoholics Anonymous. I have just had the ability to suit up and show up, and when you guys ask me to do something, I just say, okay, you know, and it's pretty much been like that since I got here. You ask me to do something for AA, I just say, okay. I don't generally question it. I didn't even have enough, you know, like I always hear people say, like, I was so rebellious when I got here. I just wasn't. I was, you know, I wasn't like a big, chunky, shoe-wearing, like, miniskirt, ass-hanging-out-of-the-bottom sort of gal when I got here. Like, I just wasn't that girl. I wasn't trying to draw attention to myself by coming into the meeting late and hugging everybody and disrupting the meeting and getting coffee 20 times during the meeting. Like, that just wasn't me, you know? That's some people's experience, not mine. So I even to this very day, walking into a meeting late, it's like I'm blind. I can't even see. I will take whatever chair. I just walked into a marathon meeting and I just took the closest chair to the door because I didn't even know what to do. I'm like, the meeting has begun. Sit. And, you know, and that's all I know how to do, you know. And then I always end up sitting in somebody else's seat. They're like, somebody's sitting there. And then I should just go. Like, I don't even, you know. So, you know, and that's just the way that things have been for me since I got here. And I think because I was so scared, you know, because I didn't know how one stayed sober. I knew I was an alcoholic when I got here. There was no conning of me. Like, you didn't have to try to, like, con me into becoming an alcoholic. I had no other outside issues that obscured me from the fact that I drank like an alcoholic. And I knew that from the very first meeting that I went to. The topic of the first meeting that I went to was what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And in the doctor's opinion, they talk about that the message that can hold the interest of the alcoholic must have depth and weight. Now, not all meetings that I go to hold depth and weight. I have been to many meetings since I have been sober. My husband and I just got back from Monterey. As he always likes to say, that just because we're on vacation, it doesn't mean our alcoholism is on vacation. And we like to go to meetings outside of town. And we went to this one hall. And you know how sometimes you might have a hall in your community that meets all day, every day. And most of those meetings really probably aren't worth very much. Because I don't know. I'm just saying. We have one in our town. I'm just saying. So, and so we found one in Monterey, and we had gone to a couple of meetings there, and there was one meeting in particular that after we were done, we were like, oh my God, we need a meeting, you know? So, and nobody at that particular group, even though they have a directory that has a whole slew of meetings in it, nobody seems to know where the other meetings are. But when we finally found the meeting, you know, it's a, you know, we create the fellowship that we crave. When we finally found the meeting that was very equivalent to our home groups, everybody knew about that meeting. They're like, oh, you shouldn't have gone there. Well, yeah, we figured that out. But, you know. You know, because, like, you know, people are rolling in late and then sharing, which always bothers me. I don't, you know, that just isn't how I was raised. I show up late. I keep my mouth shut. You know, I don't disrupt the meeting. I just come in and sit down and I'm quiet. I certainly don't roll in 10 minutes before the end of the meeting and then insist upon sharing my experience, strength, and hope, you know, so I can show you how much I don't really respect Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what that shows me. Like, I don't even have enough thought to even think about the fact that I am so consumed with self that all I can think of is how much I have to share. I have to share. This group needs me, you know. Not so much. Not when I'm so disrespectful like that. And then there was another gal who rolled in late, and then she sat next to me, and then she was in her backpack for the entire hour, and it was just crazy. And I'm not generally like an ADD sort of gal, but in meetings I have to sit up front. I have to have like all focus. I just can't be near the back because I'll be like, oh, who's that? Oh, they're coming in late. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, I'm like just looking around, and I've lost my complete focus as to why I'm there, you know? And because 15 years, I'm still pretty judgmental, in case you haven't figured that one out, you know? I'm like, gosh, we didn't like her. So if you don't like me at the end, it's probably because something I've said resonates with you. But anyway, Because I'll tell you what, I was about maybe 3 years ago, I had stolen money from my home group. I was 9 years sober. I was their treasurer. I'd been it for 2 years. Right at the end of my term, I had stolen money. Stole about $300. And it was a group that met all day, every day. So I was in charge of a whole lot of money coming in. Thank God I didn't steal the entire time, because that would have just been, you know. Anyway, so I could not get rid of that commitment fast enough. I just couldn't. Like, I just, woo, it's over. Whew. And so, you know, pass it on. And and I couldn't get my name off the bank account. I mean, it was crazy. Like, God's just sending me all this stuff. Like, there's a reason why. You just keep, you know, it's still there. It's hanging over me. And what had ended up happening is I didn't tell anybody. So it's starting to, like, ooze into every area of my life. And I can't figure out what, you know, it's like every morning I'd go out onto the balcony and I'd be praying, smoking and praying. And, you know, God, reveal to me what's going on. Because, you know, it's just like everything is really out of control in my life. And I just don't know what it is. Like, sincerely, like from the bottom of my heart, I believe this, right? And then this thought would come in. It would be like, you stole money. And I'd be like, oh, no, not that. Because I know that's what it is. But I'm going to have to tell somebody. And I don't want to tell anybody, because I think I'm something pretty special in AA. And what if they find out? And then what are they going to think of me, you know? Because like I said, I like to judge. So do other people. And so, especially if you think pretty well of yourself in AA, and you do a lot of stuff in AA, people were very excited when I finally came clean, because they're like, oh yeah, look at her, you know. So it was very. So finally, I did. I told he's my husband now. He's my boyfriend at the time, and I told him, and he's like, you know, have you told, you know, your sponsor? And I'm like, well, no, you know, should be the last one I tell, because we're always the last ones to be told when anything, you know. And so, he's like, I think you should probably tell her. And I was like, you know, okay. And so I did. And then it was fine after that, because once I was able to tell one person, it was like the floodgates were open, and I was able to, I didn't have to keep hanging on to this. And, you know, and the only thing my sponsor had asked me was why it was I felt like I could not tell anybody. What was it that was, you know, nobody asked me, why'd you steal money? I mean, everybody knows why you steal money, because you think you need it. So, you know, that's not a big mystery. But she was really concerned over the fact that there wasn't one person in Alcoholics Anonymous for like 6 months. I just, you know, held on to that. And it's like my own special, you know. So I'm just driving myself insane and driving myself back to the drink is what I'm doing. But I don't know that's what I'm doing, you know. And I like to get into the insanity that precedes the drink. You know, and I don't know why, you know, the book talks about in the 12 and 12 about, you know, like this force feeding of humble pie, and like, you know, we don't have to be so badly bludgeoned all the time, you know, but I love those words that we use, you know, force feeding and bludgeoned, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, and things don't always have to be like that. You know, but I've done it. I've done it, you know, in my sobriety, and I've made huge mistakes, and I haven't drank, and I haven't drank. And I know that I have gotten myself close to the drink numerous times since I've been sober, because I put myself into situations where I just want to look so good that I don't want for other people to not, you know. But that's, you know, so what had ended up happening was, and the reason why I ended up telling on myself in the first place was because the speaker that we had our roundup, our convention in our town. And so it was Friday night, and it was Rosie, is Larry's wife, and she was talking about that she had cheated on a test. She had just done it, and she had like 18 years of sobriety or something. She had just done it, and when she went to the meeting, I think Johnny was the one that said something to her like, well, you have to go and tell your professor. And so she went and she did all this, and she cleared it up, after the meeting, somebody was like, oh my God, wasn't she wonderful? And I was like, no, no. Why? Because I knew exactly what I had to do. And I hated her for telling that story, because now I know that I don't have any other options. You know, so once again, I'm saying if it hits close to home, you might want to take a look at it. So, anyway, I wasn't so grateful when I got here on January 6, 1998. I wasn't excited about being an Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated every minute of it. And it took me a while, and it was probably, you know, being around like-minded people, eventually getting a sponsor, working the steps that started to change everything about my life. I don't think I realized, like, how far down the scale I had gone when I got here. You know, I started drinking when I was 13, and 13 is pretty young to start drinking. I'm a teacher today, and my students, I do a fourth and fifth grade combination class, so they're like 9, 10, 11 years old, and I look at them and I think, oh, my babies, like in a few years, some of them are going to be doing the exact same thing that I was doing, because they're not, they're off to middle school, my fifth graders, next year, and so, like, I think one of my boys right now that I just had last year smoking weed on the regular, you know, thanks, Facebook, you know, so, because people will post anything on there. So, I look at them and I think, you know, because I think that, and I knew I was going to drink. I knew I was going to drink. My dad drank, and he used to drive around with one of the tall vanilla-colored cans of Coors, you know, the tall boy cans, and he drove around everywhere with a beer in between his legs, and I would take pulls off of his beers, and my dad was kind of a happy drunk guy, and so I knew I was going to drink. I'm like, God, I can't wait. I'm so excited. And so as soon as I got the opportunity to, I drank. And I drank the first time that I really tried drinking was in eighth grade. And I was in middle school, and I got suspended. Because nothing says, look at me, like five 13-year-old girls drinking out of a hairspray bottle, you know, to go, gosh, I wonder what they're doing, you know. So I'm not very stealthy, and so I got suspended in eighth grade for drinking. And then, you know, next year comes, and I'm a freshman in high school, and I'm on the flag team and marching band, and I promptly got kicked off of that of the first away performance that we have because I'm drinking and I'm drunk, and so they kicked me off of the flag team. And it happened to be this one weekend where my parents were out of town. My parents never went out of town, ever. Like, I just didn't have those kind of parents. But the one weekend they're out of town is the weekend that I get busted. So I have to tell them before the school calls on Monday. Because then it'll just be worse. And so I know that. So I don't really know how to handle anything, you know, all situations are baffling to me. And so my best idea is to hide this butcher knife behind me on this, like, buffet that's against the, it's still there. My parents' house is exactly the same as how I grew up. And so I put it, like, underneath a placemat, and I set it there, and then I stood there, and I told my parents what had happened. And they just looked at me like, what is she talking about? Like, that's crazy, right? And so anytime there's any sort of like a silence or a pause, I have to fill it with something. So I fill it with the butcher knife, and I pull it out. And my dad and mom are looking at me like she has lost her mind. But I never really ever think through a plan, so I don't know what I'm going to do after this, because I'm certainly not stabbing anybody, but I'm just, you know, I'm going to stave them up. And I don't even have those kind of parents that would warrant pulling out a knife, you know? It's not like I was beat or anything. Nothing like that ever happened to me. I had this really kind of regular sort of life, you know, it was I had a good family, I don't know. And so all I can do is stand there, and I'm holding it, and then I can see this look come over my dad's face, and all I can think of is like, throw and run, you know? So I throw it to the side and I take off running, but my dad's a little bigger than I am, and so he catches up with me, and he beat the hell out of me that night. So, and I don't really blame him, you know? I'm 13, 14 years old. I mean, my God, that's crazy. So, you know, and this is already at 14 where I'm at, you know, and this is just with some, you know, drinking periodically sort of things. And you know, by the time I'm 16, I lose my virginity drunk. And so that's just how I roll. And this is the way that my drinking ends up going for me throughout my entire drinking career. I went away to college when I was 21. I went to San Diego State University, and I went there specifically because I had gone there one time, And I was drunk from the minute that I got there till the minute that I left that weekend. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going here, you know? Because why else do you go to college, you know? I want it to be like in movies where it's like, you know, we're just partying all the time. Oh yeah, you know, and it's, you know, oh my God. And that's what I did. And I got down there and I just turned 21 when I got there. Mexico's like 20 minutes away. There is a 7-Eleven at the end of my walkway from my dorm that sells everything you could think of, and bars are abundant. And I'm 21. And so I went from drinking a few days a week to drinking every day. And from 21 to 27, I didn't draw a sober breath in all those years. And I know that if you do the math, it's like, 6 years, big deal. That's a lot of drunk. That is a lot of drunk. You know, and the book talks about that, in the doctor's opinion, which I love, that our drinking life becomes the only normal thing we know. And that's exactly what happened for me. And it's what I had already known, but by the time I was 21, and it was just on, and it was on. And for every day, I did not draw a sober breath in all of those years. I would think about it. I would talk about it. I knew there was a problem. I already had a DUI. But really, had the taillights not been out on the car, you know... And nothing to do with the fact that I blew a .21. None of those things matter, you know. And I promptly got kicked out of the university twice because I can't drink and do anything else. Like, that's the way that things ended up becoming for me. That wasn't how I set out, but that's how things ended up. You know, I believe that drinking gets us to end up spots, you know? That's where you just end up, you know? Like, I believe that Needles, California is an end up spot. Nobody intentionally means to move there. It just is where you end up, you know? You know, it's like, oh, the car broke down in Needles. Well, we'll just live there. End up spot, you know? So. But, So they kicked me out twice, and I would just make up excuses, like I didn't really want to go to school anyway. I'd wanted to be a teacher since I was probably 5, but I don't really want to do that because there's work involved with that. I have to actually finish something, and I just don't have that kind of fortitude anymore because drinking becomes the only thing that I can do in my life, and it's what I do, it's what I wake up thinking about, and it's what I pass out doing, and that's it. And so I call my last 3 years of drinking my sofa tour of 95, 96, and 97, because if you had a couch, I was sleeping on it in the greater Tehachapi, Bakersfield, Lancaster areas. And it wasn't even Bakersfield, it was Oildale. So if you're familiar with the area at all, Oildale's this lovely little suburb right outside of Bakersfield, and I'm a drunk living in Tweaker Town, so they asked me to leave. Because, you know, they have a tooth checkpoint, and I've got all mine still, and they're like, you have to go. And so I don't tell that joke in Bakersfield. It's not appreciated. Especially the one speaker meeting that I just spoke at not that long ago. It's in Oildale. So I told it once, and they were like, ooh. You know, I'm like, really, you have to know your town. If people were talking about Lancaster and Tweakers, I'd be like, yep, those are our people. So, I had gone to Tehachapi one time. We used to go there when I was in high school. My mom would be like, you know, we're taking a Sunday drive. We're going to go pick apples. And I'd be like, ugh, you know, but I would go. I would have to. You know, when you're a teenager, you don't have much choice, you know. And so, I had gone there with a friend of mine who actually was sober when I met her. She was sober when I met her, and she was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then she had gone out. Now, I don't know what any of that means. Like, I don't know that. So I knew she had been in AA, and I had gone to AA when I got the DUI. They make you go to alcohol school in between, and AA meetings in between, you know, your alcohol school. So I had been to one meeting, and I went to the Open Door, which is one of the meetings that I regularly attend on Sunday, the Sunday 11 a.m., And I had gone there. I went through the directory and I found the meeting. And my mom had to drop me off because they suspended my driver's license. And it's in a really funky part of town. You know, like it's the kind of neighborhood like when my sponsor when she worked at central office. You know, you give directions to the meetings and be like, well, it's across the street from a liquor store. So if you can find the liquor store, you can find the meeting. You know, so it's across the street from a liquor store and it's kind of one of those neighborhoods. Like if you wanted like meth, heroin, crack, it's kind of all right there. And then there's the meeting. So And so this is the meeting I choose, and my mom's not real happy about the fact that this is where she's got to drop off her, you know, I was like 18 at the time, and so I told her the meeting was an hour, come back and get me. Well, the meeting's an hour and a half, and, you know, I don't know that. But so I, you know, I throw my card in the basket, and then I can see the Honda sitting outside the door, and so I lean over to the secretary, and I'm like, I need my court card because I got to go. My mom is here. And she like picks it up and she's like, this card? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's the only one in the back. Yeah. And she's like, you're supposed to stay for the whole meeting. And I'm like, well, my mom is here. And she like flips it at me. And she's like, well, next time you have to stay for the whole meeting. And I'm like, God, what is her problem? Like, what does she care? You know? So fast forward like 15 years later, I'm the secretary of a Sunday 11 a.m. meeting at the open door. And somebody wants their court card early. And I'm like, this card? You want this card? Is this the one you want? You're supposed to stay for the whole meeting. But instead of like flipping it back to them, I'm like, hostage. And so you'll get it at the end. So it's amazing the way things will change, you know? But yeah, so anyway, I'm up in Tehachapi. And I go up there to with this friend of mine who had been sober. Her parents lived up there. And all I can think of is, like, who lives here? You know, like, weird people live in Tehachapi. And what I ended up finding was all these really like-minded people who really like to drink. And so I fell in love with Tehachapi. And we were at this guy's apartment for, like, 5 minutes. And he goes, do you want to go get beer? Now, my mom has Pomeranians, two small Pomeranians, right? And they're the kind of dogs that when she goes, like she likes to, you know, tease them, and she goes, do you want to eat? And they get all like, oh, you know, they're all excited, you know, like those kind of dogs, right, you know? And that's the way I am with them. I'm like a Pavlovian dog. Do you want to go get beer? Like, my heart starts racing, my mouth starts salivating, I'm like a little Pomeranian inside, and I'm like, oh, but outwardly, I'm like, yeah, that's cool, you know? But I have been waiting all day to drink. Because I know the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from drinking. Because I am restless, irritable, and discontented all day long. And so I know just the prospect of going to the store brings me that, oh, yeah. So I jump in the car, you know, I'm just excited now. Woo, you know. And I don't even know these people. But we get over to the AM, PM, and we're standing at the beer cooler. And Gil says, we should probably get a case of beer. And I'm like, huh, yeah, because I am all about math when I'm drinking. You know, like I said, I'm a teacher. And in our math book, they have these boxes. They're called real-world math problems. They are not real-world. I'm going to tell you right now. Especially, like, I teach the gifted kids, and most of the time I have to be like, how would you reason that out? Because I have no idea. You know, I'm just not gifted in that way. Because I think a real-world math problem sounds like this. Shalaby and five of her friends get a case of beer. How many beers will each one get? I'd be like, oh, that's a division problem. You know, and at the end, there's going to be a fraction left over. You know, I would have been all over math if I could have reasoned that out. But, you know, instead it asked me all this weird sort of stuff that I don't, you know. So we go back to their apartment, and all I can think of is like, oh, my God, I'm moving here. So they became one of my favorite couches on the sofa tour because they like to drink like I like to drink, you know, and I like people who like to drink like I like to drink. For one reason, I think, because it takes the focus off of me. If we're all being foolish together, right, you can't, you know. But what ends up happening is that I drink mostly with men. So when you drink mostly with men, they like to point out, God, Shalaby, you really drink a lot. And I'm like, really? Because we're all drinking here together, and now all of a sudden I'm the one with the problem. But I am the one with the problem because I'm the one who's getting 86th out of the bar. I'm the one who's fighting. I'm the one that now causes everybody else to fight. You know, I'm that girl, you know. I'm not a woohoo girl. I like to fight with the woohoo girls, you know, because they're really annoying. And you know who they are. There's no woohoo girls in here. I know what kind of girls we are, and we are not them. Okay, we're the ones who beat up the woohoo girls. You know, we're the ones that when you're dancing and then they keep running into you, and I'm a big girl, and so I like to turn around and I like to use that height to my advantage, and then I just go poof, and I push you. You know, once you gain your and you turn around and then you go, oh, and I'm like, that's right, what you gonna do? Like, that's who I am. You know, I'm a bully, and I'm still a bully today. You know, I would love to tell you that 15 years of sobriety, everything has just magically washed away because I did the steps. Character defects are alive and well, and they live inside of me. you know, and the steps are the only things that keep those things at bay, you know, and when I am not spiritually fit, they all just come right out, you know, and they're just right under the surface, and they're just waiting for me to have my guard down. They're waiting for that day that I forget to pray. They're waiting for that day that I forget to pray a couple days in a row. They're waiting for the day that I quit smoking so I don't go outside and pray anymore because that's out of my routine now. So all of a sudden it's like, God is in my cigarette, and so now if I'm not smoking, I'm not going, you know? And it took me like 2 weeks to figure out this. I'm like, oh my God, like really, Shalaby? That's insane. But that's how cunning, baffling, and powerful alcoholism is. It's just waiting for me to have my guard down so that little thought can creep back in. Because you know what? The insane idea always won out. It always won out. Even if I would sit there in the morning and I'd wake up and I'd feel horrible and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. I would even tell people physically, it would come out of my mouth. Today's the day I'm just going to try for today to not drink. And by like 2 o'clock, I have scrounged up enough change for 3 quarts of King Cobra, a pack of cigarettes, and some sunflower seeds. Like I'm a hamster, you know? And I got to go, you know? And but where was all my resolve? Like, you know, when I got up this morning. You know, where was all of that? You know, I'm not going to do it this time. I'm not going to do it this time. The insane idea will always win out, and it will do it even in sobriety. As soon as I have my guard down, as soon as I think I can side-click my sponsees because I don't have to answer their phone calls. I'm busy. I'm watching Survivor. You know? I don't have time. Even though I got a DVR and I can pause it, it doesn't even matter, you know? It's like all of a sudden, I just don't have that kind of time. I don't really have to go to the meeting. I'm tired. You know, I don't really have to do that. I don't have to call that person back. I don't have to be nice to my husband. I don't have to do any of that. You know, I've been around here for a while. I've been sober for a while now. When are those new people going to do something? When are they going to, you know, when I was new. And I know that you guys that are newer, you know, you hear it from us too. Well, when I was new, we were just not allowed to get away with that. You know, they told me to sit down, shut up and listen and take the cotton out of my ears and shove it. You know, we like to, you know, go on and on and on. And then you guys just go, wow, what's their problem? You know, it's called being dry. That's what it is. And those are all things that I've done. I'm not just telling you that, like, that's what I hear happens. That's what happens. That's my experience, you know? When people say things like, this is just my opinion, I'm not sharing my opinion. This is my experience. This is what has happened to me. These are the things that I have done, you know? Currently, I sponsor not one single person, not one person. You know why? Because of side-clicking, because of not being a good sponsor. You know, I have been struggling lately, and, my husband and I, I struggle with infertility, and so we went to the doctor, and I got pregnant, and everything was great, and everybody knew that we were doing this, and that pregnancy did not work out, and I was devastated. So it's a lot easier to go in with positive news than it is to have to go in and then tell people, no, this didn't work out. And what it ended up happening was is that I didn't even want to tell people. I don't want to have to go and tell people now, you know? And so there were people that, you know, and Sharon and I were talking last month. You know, there were people who stopped talking to me altogether. And I didn't even realize they had stopped talking to me until they told me, I have stopped talking to you because I just didn't even know what to say to you. And I was just, I was baffled. And I found myself consoling other people at my loss. Like telling them, like they would go, you know, Shalaby, and they would start crying. And then I would say, it's okay. But I don't, and I think because I didn't even know how to talk about it, I didn't literally mean like, it's okay. Like, no problem, you know? I meant like, it's okay that we can talk about it. But I didn't even know how to say that. You know, because how do you bring things like that up? So what do? You know, I like to isolate. I like to withdraw. I'm just that kind of gal, you know. I know how to totally be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and not be with you at all. I know how to go through the motions. I know how to suit up and show up. I know how to fulfill my commitments. I know how to do all of that and still put on a good AA face. And thank God there are people at my home group who know me, who know when I am not okay. That they can look at me, I'm either sick or I'm lying, which is one and the same, you know? Because my one friend Jim, we do the prison together, and he will, across the room, he will look at me, and he'll be like, And he just knows. He just knows. And I'm grateful for that, because most of the time I can't tell you that something is wrong, you know? And so it's been really hard, you know? And so I also like to, I'm you know, and the book talks about it, that, you know, I am full flight from reality still to this day, and I get very delusional, and I just think, you know, if we don't, you know, I'll just pull myself up on my bootstraps, which is not what you have taught me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do not have to just pull myself up on my bootstraps. If I could have done that, I could have just quit drinking, you know, and I wouldn't have had to have come here. I would have just been able to pull, you know, and then go on. And, you know, so I like to not talk to my sponsor when I'm like that. I like to isolate and withdraw and be completely by myself. And so finally, you know, and it's been really hard for me, and even with her, with my sponsor, because she doesn't have children. She never wanted children. And so it's really hard sometimes to talk about things when you know that somebody else doesn't have your experience. When they don't have your experience. And it's been really difficult for me in sobriety, in AA, to find somebody with this particular experience. You know, and we find people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the thing I love about being here, is that not everybody in AA is for everyone, but there is someone in AA for everyone. You know, and it's just been really a struggle for me, because sometimes I feel like she just doesn't understand. But that's because I'm not talking to her. And the minute that I sat down with her and we did talk about it, she does understand. She's like, Shalabi, if this continues on and on and on for months and months and months, she's like, then there's a problem. She's like, but this just happened like 3 months ago. But see, in my mind, that's too long to marinate over a problem. You know, where's the solution at? Where's your solution, Shalabi? I mean, I got ladies at work that struggle with the same, that have struggled with the same sort of thing, but they're normies. I don't know how they just kind of, they post their business all out on Facebook and have other people that like rub their, I'm not a back rubber. I don't know what that is, you know? And so, and I'm also not somebody who likes to put myself out there in that kind of way. I will in Alcoholics Anonymous, but not just in general like that. And that's how they work themselves out on the social media plane, you know. I've got to work mine out on the altruistic plane. And I'm not always all that good at it, you know. And so she was the one that said, you know, you're not sharing about it at all. I'll share about it with the guys at the prison, because my joke with them is, anything I say to them, who are they going to tell, you know? And they always tell me, they're like, oh, you're just wrong. And I'm like, I know, you know? And I love the guys. I love the guys that I do a panel out at California State Prison out in Lancaster. And those guys have saved my life. And I'm sure they have absolutely no idea. You know, just like for all the years prior to that, I took a panel out to Warm Springs. And Warm Springs is a men's facility. And I have been going out there since I had just over 30 days of sobriety, and they just shut that facility down and they moved the men to the Acton site. They like to call it Warm Springs, but it's not. And then they won't let women go in there anymore. And so anyway, I have the prison panel now, and it's an A yard. So a lot of, there have been some of the guys that have gotten out, and we've, you know, been able to see them. But I did a 4 yard panel, and that's a totally different and I really liked it. I haven't gone back yet because my schedule hasn't permitted me to, but if you do this kind of work, I didn't know if I was a prison girl. Like, I didn't know if I could do the prisons, you know. I like the treatment part of it, and it's a different sort of, you know, way of carrying the message, because, you know, most of the guys, they're not going anywhere, you know, and so it's been a new experience for me, but...
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Anyway, let me see. My last year of drinking, I'm in Tehachapi. I end up living in a fifth wheel next to somebody's house with no electricity and a pet rat. And so Anthony and I were just talking about that today, and I that rat died shortly after I got sober, and he said, probably because it didn't want to get sober. And I said, yeah, probably not. And so but I used to sit in this fifth wheel, and I would pour beer into a bottle cap, and he would drink with me, so I don't have to drink alone. And And but I couldn't come up. They wanted like $100 for rent, and that's a lot of money to drink on, and I just don't have that kind of money, and so I have to move. And I always go home. I always go home to my mom and dad's. And so now I'm 27 years old, and I'm calling home again. I need to come home. And so there are rules attached to me coming home. I have to go get a job, and I go, oh, I know. And I have to go back to school, and I go, yeah, I know. And you have to not be drinking. Oh, what an order. I can't go through with it. I mean, you know. And I really felt that way. Like, I can, for me, the words I know, just, they really mean shut up. Like, I know you to death. Oh, yeah, I know. Oh, I know. I like to, like, appease you. Like, I think, I want you to think that I believe you. And I don't. I think that you're wrong, but I'll just be like, oh, yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, I know. And it's just, it just means shut up. And so, so next time you're talking to a sponsee and they, I know you to death, you'll be like, ooh, you'll know. They're just telling you to shut up. They don't really want to do what, you know, they don't really want what you have. And so, so I moved back home, and I really have no intentions of not drinking. And so once again, I spend all day stealing change, and then I wait for my parents to go to bed, and I steal my mom's car, and I roll it out of the driveway, and then I turn the, you know, engine on, and I hit the lights, and I go to the liquor store, and I have them double bag my three quarts of King Cobra and sunflower seeds and cigarettes. Just by the way, that's a lot of change in a day. I'm just going to put that out there. It's a lot of change to be scurrying around like I'm, you know, it's shiny, like I'm a raccoon, and I love shiny stuff, you know, and I put it in this backpack, this satchel that I carry, and I coast it back into the driveway. I cut the lights and the engine, and I roll it in, and I just pray that my mom is not standing at the door when I get there, you know, because I don't know what it is about, like, but oh God, we're so loud when we're drunk. Like, I mean, I don't know, maybe you guys weren't, but I was just like, I was like the Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz, you know, just loud, like just loud. And I would bring people to my parents' house, strangers, people that I had met at the bar, my new friends, them bring them over, you know, and my mom would come. She was like Harry Potter with that invisibility cloak. Like, one minute she wouldn't be there, and the next minute, bam, she's right in front of me. I'm like, God. So I used to call her robe, the blue stealth robe. Like, all of a sudden she just stealth in. I'd be like, oh wow. And she would just tell me, shut up. Like, I can hear your voice just drones, and who are these people? And I'm like, these are my friends, you know, they're my friends. What's your name again? You know, I don't even know who they are. Probably gonna have sex with one later, you know, it's all good. It's my people. And So I roll in the house, and I try to be as quiet as I can, and I go in, and I go into my room. It's not even really my room. It's my sister's room, because I don't really have anything anymore. And I uncap that King Cobra, the tasty malt beverage, and my body doesn't want to drink. My head wants to drink, but my body doesn't. And so what ends up happening is that I take a pull off of that King Cobra, and it hits my stomach, and it comes right back up. And I know this is going to happen, because now this has become my experience, and so I'm quick to close off my throat so that I don't puke all over my bedroom. And I just let it take that roller coaster ride until it can settle in my stomach, and then I take another, and the same thing happens. And after I can get about three down and they can stay, then I'm like, ah. Now, I don't know. That is not normal drinking. I envision like my normie coworkers. Like, I don't imagine anybody right now that I work with is trying to keep a margarita down. You know, like they're like, let me just. No, I'm good. You know, I just don't think that's happening. You know. Because I've been on cruises with these people. I've been to happy hour with them after work, you know, and they are the lamest drinking people I have ever seen in my entire life. So it just reminds me that still to this day, my thinking about drinking is not normal. I still think in multiples of 12. I think a 12-pack would be nice to start with. When the thought has occurred to me over the years, you keep acting like this, you should probably drink. What are you going to drink? A 12-pack? Like, it's that fast, you know? What kind of, well, you know, you have a little money in your pocket, you probably get something good, like maybe Rollin' Rock, or maybe you can get Lowenbrow, you know? I mean, really? Like, that's where my head goes. 10 years of sobriety, 12 years of sobriety, I'm still thinking about what's my brand, you know? Is King Cobra still 99 cents plus tax plus CRV? No, I told that joke at Warm Springs. One of the guys told me it's like $2.13. I'm like, for that? Like, are you joking? So, inflation, you know. But, yeah, I envision being drunk with my coworkers sometimes. It's because I don't know why, but I just sit there because they're so weird. Like, they will literally, like happy hour, they'll drink and they'll have like a beer or a margarita, and then like when it's over, they're like, okay, I'm going home. And they mean they're really going home. Like, they're going to go home. They're going to cook a meal or something and like put their kids to bed and stuff. And I'm like, it is so weird. Like, why wouldn't you want to live here? You know? Like, why wouldn't this be like your new spot? You know? You know, so you can just like walk in and everyone's like, Shalabee. And I'm like, that's right. You know? And I imagine, like, I know what would happen. Like, I don't like a lot of my coworkers, like right now, and I'm pretty decently spiritually fit, like, you know, enough to be cordial to them and hold doors open to the most selfish teacher on staff. You know, I do all that stuff because I have to be the bigger person. I can complain about her, but there are things I have to do regardless of how I feel about her. She will literally, she, you know, teachers have those little rolling things, and teachers are not nice. I'm just going to tell you that. So anyway. And then she will literally stand there. She'll pull that little cart behind her, and she'll stand there and make me move out of her way. And I just look at her, and I always get out of her way because I know it's the right thing to do. And I don't want to. I want her to walk around me. But I feel like we'd be at a stalemate. We'd be there for a really long time, you know. I have to move, you know, but, and now today I will just hold the door open for her because I know she's not going to move. And you know what is crazy is that in all of these years of just having this, like, oh, I can't, oh, she just drives me crazy. She came to me the other day and there's some new app, some new game that has the four pictures, four pics and a something. And she's like, you know, we could use this in the classroom. I'm going to take pictures of all of them, put them on a flash drive and give them to you. And you can work it out with your kids to see if you can make it work as like an educational tool. Now, if I was still being jerky and doing all of that stuff, there's no way she would have come to me. And you know what the other thing she did the other day, which is just out of character, she had shown me one, and she's like, can you figure out what this is? And I was looking, and the four pictures, one of them was like a stage, and the other one was another kind of stage, and then there was a stagecoach, and then there was a picture of an embryo going through the stages. And I said, oh, is it stage? And she said, yeah. The next day she came to me and she said, I am so sorry. Because everyone on staff knew that I was pregnant. And she's like, I'm really sorry. And I'm like, for what? You know, and she's like, for the picture. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Because you know what, today, you know, and that's what my sponsor gave me direction, that I'm to come and talk to you guys about the things that happened to me. Because every time I close myself off from you and from the sunlight of the Spirit, I am no good to anybody. You know, and just in the short time that we have been here, I have welled up and been overwhelmed with the gratitude that comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, and this was something that, you know, when Patty came to speak at our roundup, I had never met her before. I had no idea what she looked like. I had no idea. I had only heard her on tape and on CD. Because eventually I evolved as well. That's why I thought it was funny in your format. It said pager. I was thinking, oh, that's sad if somebody has a pager. So, And I'm like, oh, like 90s, zzz, zzz. Anyway, but, and so, but she, and so when I met her, I just gushed. I was so overjoyed. And she talked about, we had a workshop, and she was talking about that when my sobriety can touch your sobriety. And that's what she did for me without ever meeting me. She didn't know that's what she was doing. But I secretly think that deep down inside of us, when we stay sober, we know that's what we're doing. Our hope is that what I have to say will help somebody else. Because that's what happened to me. That's what happened to me. I'm living at my parents' house. I'm drinking myself to death. I'm sitting at the table with my mom. I'm drunk. I know the conversation is coming. It's the same conversation we've been having for years. And there's no way I know myself out of this anymore. And she said, you know, I need you to go get a job, go back to school, and I need you to not be drinking. And I said, if I'm not drinking, my life is really going to suck, and I'm not going to have any friends, and I'm not going to be funny. And she said, first of all, Shalaby, it's really sad if you think that drinking has made you the person that you are, because if anything, it's taken that person away. And second of all, you haven't been funny in a really long time. My mom was quick like that. My mom was always very quick like that. And she was always saying things to me that were so hurtful. So would. She was so mean. She's so mean, you know. And really what she was doing was telling me the truth. And the truth is really, it's really hard to stomach. When you hear the truth and it's that thing that you're like, man, like I hate you. I hate you, you know. And I used to not call my mom quick all the way up until about a month ago. I called her bitch. I would tell that story and I would call her bitch because I think I like to say it from the podium in regards to my mom. I have been sober for 15 years and I still have trouble with my mom. I have done inventory after inventory after inventory. And I always come back to the same thing. I am almost exactly like my mom. Really, you know, you want to swallow some large chunks of truth about yourself. The reason that you're probably so upset about whatever it is that you're so upset about is because it's you, you know, and that's what I have found out. And it was funny because Anthony was the one that had pointed out. He's like, you called your mom quick. You called her quick. You didn't call her the B word. That's crazy. And I said, I know. I said, all these years, it's taken me 15 years to not get some sort of secret joy and satisfaction out of still disrespecting her, even from the podium. And my mom is quick, and she told me she couldn't wait till I had children, so they could grow up to be alcoholics, so that I could watch them drink themselves to death like she had to watch me, and I hated her for that. And then I got on the phone and I'd call people drunk, you know. She's just cursed me with alcoholic children, and who would do that, you know? She didn't, you know, the book talks about frothy emotional pill seldom suffices, and my mom didn't know what to say to me. She knows I'm dying. She knows I am dying, and she doesn't know what to say to me because sometimes it comes out, and it's really like, Shalaby, you're better than this, and what are you doing, and you know. And then other times it sounds like that, you know. And what I realized, and it took me a long time to realize, is that, you know, my mom, she wanted me to stop drinking, but she couldn't offer me a solution. She wants me to pull myself up by my bootstraps. She wants me to just pull and move on, you know, just move on. And I can't do that anymore, and she doesn't know that I can't do that anymore. I don't even know I can't do that anymore. So how is she gonna know? You know, so we're sitting at the table, and she tells me all that, and I said, okay, I won't drink. And it was, I used to say three of the most excruciating days. It was two. It was two. It was 2 days. I had to drink on the third day. I didn't know what else to do. And so I went and got some Albertsons charcoal filtered vodka. You know, the kind that just says vodka and comes in plastic. And, you know, I always think, like, that's specifically made for the alcoholic. Like, in case you drop it, you know. It's like, oh, look. You know. And, I always thought it would be really cool, like, if you could drop it hard enough and make it bounce back into your hand, you'd have, like, a party trick, you know, like, vodka, you know, and then this guy came over. Now, I don't know that I have the reputation that I have, but I have a pretty strong reputation over the years of drinking, and it's kind of for being a drunk and kind of a slut. You know, so, but I don't know that that's, I don't even know, like, I'm so delusional. I'm so delusional when I drink that I don't even know how other people perceive me. I have no idea. And so this guy came over, and he was always one of those guys who was like, hey, Shalaby, you want to, and I'm like, oh, no, you're like a troll, and no. And, I mean, not to his face, behind his back, come on, you know, I'm a little nice. And so, so we go to the bar, and we take my sister with us, and she knows I'm not supposed to be drinking, and I can just feel it, and she's staring at me, and so we got to get rid of her because she's being a killjoy and a wet blanket, and I can't have that, not when I'm drinking. And so so we drop her off, we pick up an 18-pack, and we end up out in the middle of the desert, and it's January, and so it's cold, and as I'm hanging off the bumper to pee, all I can think of is, wow, Shalaby, nothing in your life has changed in all these years. Like, this is your awesome way of living. You live at home with your mom and dad, you can't hold a job, and all you do is drink all day long. And I jump back in the truck, and I say, you know, how come we can't do the things that other people do? And he says, well, we can. I said, maybe you can, I can't. This is it, my entire life. This is my entire life. And then I was not a blackout drinker, although sometimes I wished I was. And because, you know, when I hear you guys talk about, like, I don't really remember anything about my drinking, I'm like, wow, how lucky for you, you know, because it's just all right there. And you know, but I would have brownouts. I like to call them brownouts, you know, like when lights flicker, they just like go and then like zzz, and they come right back on, you know. And so that's the way it was. Like, I always knew, I might not know what we were talking about, but I always know we were talking because that's like my hobby. And so... And most of the time, you didn't even really have to talk. And you could be like, Pat, you know, like, and I'd be like, hey, and I'd poke it, you know. And so I, you know, one minute I'm talking to the troll, and then the next minute it's like, zzzup, naked. And so, because I'm not real discerning, you know, and I don't really care. And you know what? I found out from doing an inventory that it wasn't that man that was a troll, it was me. It was me. That was the way my behavior was, and I didn't care who I hurt, at what expense that I did the things that I did. I didn't care. It didn't. Whatever I want to do is what we're going to do, and that's it. And so he dropped me off at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's the way I drink, and I come walking up, and the front door is locked, and I'm like, the audacity of this door to be locked at a house that is not mine, you know? I mean, it's my parents' house, you know? I'm 27, and I'm a visitor in their home, you know? And I'm banging on the window because my dad is up. My dad is up getting ready for work. That man got up every morning and drank his pot of coffee, whether he was drinking or not, because he had quit drinking years before I got sober. And but he likes to still smoke weed. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. He's still, you know, anyway, but... And so he's sitting at the table reading his Time magazine, drinking his pot of coffee, and I'm banging on the window and doing like, you know, so he can let me in. And I go shuffling past him, and he told me later on the only reason he didn't say anything about my drinking is that because he drank like that and he knew that I wouldn't listen to him anyway. And he was right. And that's why I probably took it from my mom, though, because she didn't drink. And so that's probably why I would kind of listen to her. And I believe the things that my mom said were things that helped me to really start to think about what it was that I was doing. And so I went in and I passed out and I got up the next day and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting because I know my sister's told on me. She's tattled. I'm probably going to get busted. They'll put me on restriction. Not when you're 27. None of those things really happen like that. But see, my mind is like a child. So, you know, I'm like a teenager, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, and I'm probably totally going to get busted, and, you know, and then they'll probably put me on a restriction. No, they put you out of the house. Like, they kick you out, you know. But my mind doesn't think like that, you know. And so the next day, sure enough, I say something sarcastic, and from the other room I hear my mom screaming to get out of her house. And I'm like, that's fine. And I go packing up my stuff, and then I start putting it back because... I don't want to have all this stuff with me when I beg to come home in like 6 months, you know? I like to keep it light. And so she, you know, I don't know what happened. I sat in that room and I started crying, you know? And we talk a lot about having moments of clarity. And I sat in that room and I thought, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? The book talks about being at a jumping off place where you can't see your life with alcohol and you can't see your life without it. And that's exactly where I was. And for whatever reason, I knew I had a tiny, tiny window of opportunity to reach out and ask for help. Because with me, and I think with a lot of alcoholics, those moments are fleeting. They're fleeting, they are short, and there is action to be taken. You know, and I think that's why our book over and over again talks about there is action and more action. There are things that we constantly have to be doing. And so I went out into the kitchen, and I was crying, and then my mom was crying, which is always a good sign, because you know what that means. She's going to let me stay. And so she did. She did let me stay. I told her I would go to AA, and I would get a sponsor, and I asked her, why did she let me? I was coming up on a year of sobriety, and I asked her, why did she let me stay that day? And she said, because I felt like you were an animal trapped in a cage, and I was hoping that that would be the day you would let yourself out. And I believe God let me out of the cage that day. And I picked up the phone. I called my friend Meg that had been sober and drank again, and then she was sober again. And I picked up the phone, and I called her, and I thank God for the answering machine because she wasn't home. And I left her a message, and I was like borderline hysterical. And I told her, I need you to call me. And she called me back, and she told me that she only reason she called me back is she thought something had happened to someone in my family. And her sponsor had given her direction that she was supposed to let me go and pray I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe her prayers are what brought me here. And so that was, I I had called her. She called me back, and she's like, okay, I'll pick you up tonight. And I was like, wow, that's fast, you know? Because I don't know. I don't know that, when we're waiting for you, we're waiting for you. We're waiting for the phone call. Just don't call me, I'll side click you. But anyway, I'm just joking. I wouldn't do that, maybe. But so it's like, you know, it's like, I need help. She's like, AA, she's at my door. I'm like, oh my God, how did you get here so fast? You know, it's like, you know, we send an AA beacon like the bat, you know, like the, you know, up over your house so we know where to find you. And so, you know, we zip line out of the ceiling, AA, you know, I don't know. But she said, I'll pick you up tonight. And all I said was, okay. And from that day to this, pretty much what has been asked of me, I've just said, okay. Even if my head says something completely different, usually out of my mouth just comes out, okay, what do you need me to do, you know? And even if I'm stomping my feet and I'm being childish about it, chances are I'll just end up saying, okay, you know, because I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, the topic that night was what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. And that meeting totally changed everything about my life. And from that day to this, you know, we talk about, you know, being at a turning point. And that was a complete turning point in my life. And my life has never been the same since. My life has never been the same since. God put a man named DeAndre in my life who was completely active in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's the one that got me involved with carrying the message into hospitals and institutions. And he laughed with his whole soul. From the tip of his toes to the top of his head. And I hadn't seen laughter like that in a really long time. And he would grab onto you when he would laugh, and his tongue would fly out of his mouth, and he would just be all, ah! and he would pull you, you know? And I would just be like, what is he doing, you know? And once again, made it seem like maybe sobriety was going to be okay. You know, and I just followed him around, and he was not my sponsor. He was just somebody that I watched have this love and enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous, like I have already witnessed in the short time that I have been with you. Because that's the thing, that's that attraction. That's the attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can talk and talk and talk and talk, but if I don't see you doing something, you know, the book talks about to show you precisely how we have recovered, to show you. I'm not here to tell you, I'm here to show you. So if I'm here with you right now and I'm telling you, and then you see me out there trying to tell something to registration, like, you know what? Because anytime I start a sentence with, you know what, we're having problems, you know? You know, where's my sticker? Where's my speaker sticker, you know? I need to be identified at all times. Where is my speaker sticker, you know? Because it wasn't in my basket. Where's my basket? No. I'm just joking. Andrew's like, I got you your basket. Why are you so mean? And she did, and she's been completely lovely and wonderful, I'm so overjoyed to be sober, and I wish that I could keep that all the time. I wish I was all, I, you know what, but it's like to be reminded when I am with people, and it is only when I'm with you, when I'm sitting at home alone marinating and I'm just going to roll around in it for a while. I can't see what's going on. You know, what's that thing, you know, people that don't go to meetings don't find out what happens to people who don't go to meetings, or whatever it is, you know. Like, I don't know what's going on with you if I am not there, you know, and it's not because I'm there to see, you know, like to gossip and stuff. You know what they're doing, because, you know, I'm not that gal. By the time I find out whatever it is that's happened, it's usually already happened. I'm like, oh, they're divorcing? That's weird, you know. It's not like I heard about it, like it actually came to fruition and it's already, you know. You know, I met my husband in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I heard somebody, I've already heard like four people say it, you know, it's the 13th step, and it's not a step, it's a tradition. And so you can use that. It's okay. I'm trying to spread it. Anyway, the only reason nobody talks about me and my husband is because he's my husband. But he was new. He was new. He was new. He had barely 5 months when we started dating, and I had 9 years. So, you know, so I was like, you like a newcomer, huh? Yeah, what about it? You know, what are you going to do? I don't even know. Because you know what? It doesn't say anything in the book about, you know, oh, you need to have, you know, a year of sobriety. It's like all this AA folklore, things we like to make up, you know? And most of the time, it's not even out of your experience. It's what I heard in a meeting. Well, I hear lots of stuff in meetings. It doesn't mean that it's right or real, you know? It comes out of the big book and, you know, or the 12 and 12, you know? I love the 12 and 12. And, you know, it talks about in the 12 and 12 when boy meets girl on AA campus and love at first sight ensues. And if we have all this baggage that we bring into it, if we don't clear those things up, it's not really going to work out, you know. But what I did is I watched him and you know, and I'd like to say that, you know, I started going to a meeting that he was making coffee at, you know. I'd like to be like, oh, I just started going to this meeting. No, I went because I knew he was there. And so, and because somebody, I was sponsoring a girl he was in rehab with, and she's like, oh, he says you're hot. And I'm like, really? Well, then I must go. And so, because since I've been sober, I am not the girl that I was when I was drinking. I came in here, I wasn't with anybody. I have not dated wildly since I have been sober. I have been single the bulk of my sobriety. You know, and God brought Anthony to me, and I thought I would just spend the rest of my life doing like it talks about in the 12 and 12. Single AAs can throw themselves the harder into work and doing all the really functional stuff, and alcoholics, oh, I used to get so mad every time I'd be at a 12 and 12, and they'd talk about, you know, they can put on dances, blah, 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 and I'm like, ugh, you know, and then, or I'd read, you know, every time they have a dance, they're like, couples are $5, but singles are $3, and I'm like, why do we get gypped, like, you know? Like, you roll solo, all of a sudden you got to pay more, you know, really? And so I was, you know, obviously a little resentful. And so because although I was single, it wasn't necessarily something that I wanted. It wasn't like I was striving for that. But I didn't really know how to be in a relationship. I had never really been in one. 15 minutes spent with another human being, you know, bam, chicka, bam. That's not a relationship, you know. That's just, this is killing time. And so And so I brought all that into, you know, I brought all that resentment that I had when my dad cheated on my mom. I will never let anybody do that to me. I will never let anybody hurt me. I will never let, never, 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 you know, just keep heaping that on and on and on. And you know, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps, I've been able to work those things out so that I don't have to keep holding on to those. So it's not the thing that drives me for the rest of my life, you know. I'm not very good at being with someone else. It's really hard. It's really hard. And so, you know, but I'm up for something new, and I'm up for trying to be a better person, you know? My day went like this. I got up this morning and I woke up next to my husband. And I was on the phone with my mom for about a half an hour. We were chatting about school stuff, and she was telling me about some crazy student, and you know, we were laughing, and I made a joke, and then she laughed really hard, and we can do that today, you know, and we have a totally different relationship than we used to. And basically every Sunday I spend with my mom, and we go to the movies together, and that's like our date day. And then we've been doing that my entire sobriety. You know, and my dad, who I had no relationship prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to specifically set up a day to go to dinner with him because I couldn't even stand being in the same room with him. And by the time, you know, we started going to dinner together, and then I started telling him that I loved him, and then he wouldn't say I love you back because that's not who my dad is. He's like a right back at you kind of guy, and, you know, ditto and stuff like that. And I went to my sponsor and I said, you know, he doesn't say I love you back. And she said, if you're only telling him you love him because you're wanting that response back, she's like, then you're not doing it for the right reasons. And I was like, okay. You know, and then, you know, and it took a long time before he finally said, I love you, you know, and now he does it on the regular, you know, and he doesn't live here anymore. He lives up in Washington near my sister. And, you know, and today my sister, you know, I have a niece and a nephew that I just get to lavish all kinds of, you know, present love on them. And we go up there at least twice a year. We drive up and spend time with them. And last summer we got to spend a month up there because, you know, I had the time off and so did Anthony. And we got to spend an entire month up there so I can get to know, you know, those babies. And, you know, now my nephew can talk and it's just fantastic. And he calls me Auntie B, and you know, and it's awesome. And she goes like, he could probably say Shalaby now. I'm like, no, I like being Auntie B, you know, I like that. And my life today is just, it's phenomenal, and it's changed so much. And I never thought I would be married, but I am. You know, and God's got the plan. You know, God knows what to do, and God's got it, you know, and you know, it's like that saying, you know, what is it, you know, like, God only knows, you know, and we say that, but really, God only knows. God only knows. I don't know. I don't know what the plan is for me or for anybody else. You know, but I just keep suiting up and showing up, and the most spiritual thing that I can do every day is the thing that is right in front of me. Even when I can't feel the presence of God, because that waxes and wanes for me, but I do what is right in front of me, the thing that is right in front of me. And that's when I know that I'm doing whatever God's will is for me. Because God's will doesn't hurt, and it is not a struggle, and I don't even have to think about it. It just happens. You know, a couple weeks ago, I've had the same 8 students. I had them in 4th grade, and I had them again this year. And one of my boys, who I just love, and I just want the best for him, and I just know he's going to go down this crazy path, because I just know, and I just love him, and he's got an old soul, and his name is Al, and I just, I always tell my principal that, you know, like, Al really needs me, and she's like, Shelby, they all need you, like, it's not just him, but he just has this place in my heart, and I said to him, I don't know, it was last week or the week before we went off at spring break, and I said, Al, you know I love you, and he goes, I know. And I said, how do you know? And he says, because I can see it in your eyes. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Because children don't lie. We teach them to lie. You know, I had a student 1 year, he's like, oh, I don't like that picture of you. And I was like, oh. I'm like, Brandon, don't say things like that. He goes, I didn't say I didn't like you. I said I didn't like that picture. But I want him to lie, you know. I'm like, you know. And I was like, oh, he's right. And that's when it dawned on me. Like, we teach other people. You know, we say, oh, we treat other people how to treat, you know, we teach them how to treat us. No, we teach them how to lie to make us feel better. You know, and I just know that he doesn't have the ability to lie to me yet, you know. And when he says that, all I could think of was AA. That comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. That if a child tells me they can see it in my eyes, that it has to be true. Because why else? And he didn't even hesitate. It's not like he was coming up with something great to say. He just said it. You know, and those are the things that remind me of the gratitude that I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, being able to have become a teacher in sobriety, to have these babies near me and want to be with me, you know, and I want to be with them. And I just feel really grateful that today I want to be with you so that I can keep this thing going one day at a time, you know. And I don't know. I just thank you guys so much for being here.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.